actually here, and this call was supposed to be here. Just before I start talking about universal resources for blah, 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 an afternoon announcement. So there's a welcome barbecue this afternoon at IQC. Barbecue, though it seems that we are probably eating indoors by some organization miracle because it's going to be raining. Nobody really cares about the parking laws over there because it's a little of nothing. No, they're going to be putting some rules, but for the moment they're not enforced yet. So the new building is, well, here was the old building, and the new building is up here. So there's going to be a shuttle leaving from PI. It's in the last slide. I forgot to update.
What time?
4:15 this afternoon. If not, if you're brave, you can walk. So a lot of people who've been here already have walked from PI to all those you see. Then it's like about another 10 to 15 minutes, I think, for those who've done it. Okay, this blue line is the car track, according to Google. And the red one is the on foot track, according to people who've been living here for a while.
So what's welcome about this barbecue?
The welcome is it's a brand new temporary IQC building. It only moved there on Monday, and it's temporary for the next 2 or 3 years. I think it's two in the optimistic scenario. It's probably three in the realistic one.
So the shuttle starts here at 4 or what?
4:15 downstairs somewhere. Might be the expert thing. If you have a question about the shuttle. Also, if you know someone who's living there by car, you're probably welcome to ask him or her for a ride.
So there is a perimeter Institute Wine and Cheese starting at 3:45. You have half an hour to load up.
We have such a wine and cheese at the
meeting.
Let's
get
it to start the topic. It's 7 later.
It's obvious people
are
Okay, now let's go on with some physics. As the title sort of said, we're talking about measurement-based quantum computation. Now, the idea was that Hans was supposed to be here and talk about measurement-based quantum computation earlier this week, but he didn't come. So I sort of expanded this slightly in my introduction to include some of what I call the exact state operators. Now, operator is not an English word, but I like it, so I'm using it anyway. Because this is previous work done by Martin, Akimasa, Hans, and Wolfgang, and then moved to the most recent work, which treats the problem of approximate and stochastic state operators. As you can see, I'll talk about some basic tools, some criteria, and some no-go and go results, and conclude at last. So, one-way model. Dan Brown introduced it, and a lot of other people too. You start with a cluster state, which is something that looks like this, where blue dots are qubits and edges represent entanglement. And then you do a bunch of single qubit measurements here and there. You do some classical communication and classical post-processing, and by magic, you get a quantum computer, which is equivalent to the circuit model, and all this is well known. So, state preparation. I'm underlining, whenever I talk about universality here, I'm talking about universal state preparation. So I'll repeat it at least 3 times or 4 during the talk, so you should stick. So the idea is what we know for the cluster state model is that whenever I get any state in the Hilbert space, whatever it is, I can find a large enough cluster state and a measurement pattern such that I start with my cluster, I do my measurement, I do my classical post-processing, which is not on this slide because I forgot it, and I end up with my state, my exact state, and I have exact state preparation. So I'll say that the family of cluster state is universal for exact, I have exactly my state, and deterministic, well, I think it was stressed like 1,000 times during this week, you do manage to have deterministic computation. State preparation. So quantum computation always in the sense of state preparation. Okay, now the common question is, well, just how special is the cluster state? So this was summary of how computation on the cluster state went. And the idea is, well, what if I take the cluster state and substitute it with some other resource state? And to simplify analysis, I'll take single qubit measurements and classical communication and also post-processing and call everything like that in local operations and classical communication. This makes things a little bit easier. And now the question is, which families of states still allow for universal quantum computation? Well, a family of states are always represented with a capital Greek letter and the elements that you see here. So this is a family of quantum states. And what I require is that for all possible quantum states, I can find a state in this family such that there exists an LOCC protocol that takes me from phi to psi. In this case, this family is a universal resource. Second or third time. Universal quantum attention is universal state preparation in this model. This is because there was a huge dialogue going on back and forth. What do you mean by universal quantum computation? What do you do? So I'll always be using these two things as synonyms. Now, as you might have guessed by the fact that I was choosing LOCC operations and not any other random thing, I was aiming at going to study the role of entanglement in measurement-based quantum computation. So let's start from the exact deterministic case. So this is what we have, assuming that our resource family is universal. Now, of course, we all know that LOCC operations cannot increase entanglement, more or less by definition. So, of course, from this it follows that the entanglement of my initial state must be greater than the entanglement of my final state, whatever the entanglement measure EI I'm talking about. Now, of course, if I'm assuming that my resource is universal, then I can imagine to do a similar argument for whatever final state I have over there. The result is that, well, let's define E star as the supremum of the entanglement measure that then taken over all possible states. Now, what does this mean? It means that all states, all dimensions, this guy is going to be infinity for a lot of cases. But okay, fine. Now, it follows that if there is a family of quantum states is a universal resource, then this equality must be satisfied, where the entanglement of a set of states is a supremum over all states in the family itself. Now, this is sort of natural because I just tell them that whatever I get here, I can put here and they go to satisfy my inequality. Now, what this means is that if I compute E of phi and E star for some entanglement measure E and for some family phi, you can actually prove that some families are not universal for quantum computing. So this provides a necessary condition, well, a number of necessary conditions for universality of resources. Just to show that you can actually do it, at least sometimes. Well, the easy examples are here. The hard ones are in the paper because the hard ones take a lot of space to explain. So the easy example is the family of W state. Okay, this is W3. It's one and the other are zeros, and you just get all permutations, and you can assume that you get any n in there. And then you can find an entanglement measure, which is the geometric measure, for example, which was introduced by Suche, who was around now and then. I don't see him now. Here, there he is, which is defined this way, where this soup is taken over all separable states. And now you see that E star, you can prove that it's sort of bounded this way. Well, this is qubit. This is E for n qubit, so E star is 1. But on the family of psi w, of w states, you can actually bound that measure. And this is clearly greater than that. So w states are not universal for quantum computation. Cool. Not particularly new and strong result, but still it gives you an idea of the sort of argument that you can do. You can actually generalize, find other measures that allow you to tell a similar result for some graph states, some ground states. And to do that, you use what was called the Schmidt-Rankwitz, which is a entanglement measure which is associated to the Schmidt-Rank. Okay, all these guys are not universal, and the proof doesn't fit in the small margin, I'm sorry. Not my fault, that's, you know, that was a room I had. Okay, now, this, as I told you, the work I've told up to now is not due to me. So let's go to things that contributed. And the idea is, okay, we've seen that what we defined exact universality, we asked that this thing was possible. But now, we know that often enough, exact preparation is not necessary or even not possible. So what happens if we just were happy with something a little bit weaker, some approximate or stochastic universality, which very formally is defined as, well, for all states, there is a phi in my family, such that most of the time, the output is close enough to my desired output. Okay, this is the formal definition, and this is the mathematical one. So you get, I want that in my, I have my state phi, and I want, I can find, I want to find an LOCC protocol such that, well, the LOCC protocol will have, in general, several branches with some output with some probability. And now, well, what's close enough? Well, close enough means that these outputs are epsilon close to my desired output psi. And what is most of the time? Well, most of the time means that the probability that this thing happens is actually greater than 1 minus some delta. So we have some sort of epsilon approximate and delta stochastic universality when these two conditions are satisfied. Of course, these two things are independent, so you might decide that you want exactly your state at least sometime, and this becomes a one close, zero close, or you just want it to happen always, but you're happy to be close enough to your state. So.
Because in some sense.
No. they do have some relationship in some sense, but it's not the same thing to require to end up always close to your state or sometimes exactly on your state. In general, it's different.
But either way, it satisfies your...
Well, it depends. What I will define is something that is epsilon approximate delta stochastic universality, and you get to choose your epsilon and your delta. So some results are valid for, I don't know, every epsilon, but only delta equal to zero, or similar things. What we are looking for are criteria that allows us to really discriminate between resources for given epsilon and deltas. Yep.
Nature would be due to measurement that you will perform and not necessarily correct them? That's where...
Well, I guess you could see it this way. For the moment, we are just looking at... you're just looking at, assume that I'm doing the best I can with my measurements, but for some reason, the resource I have, I cannot manage to have a cluster state, maybe because it's really expensive and I don't have enough money, maybe because I'm in an experimental setting and they just can't do it exactly, maybe whatever happens. There are a bunch of reasons why you might not have exactly the resource you knew would be perfect, and you get something which is weaker. Yeah, for the time being, my LOCC operation will be perfect, and we will say so for the whole talk. Maybe, I do hope I can make it non-perfect in the future, but that's tricky. So, okay, the idea was, okay, we had these results for the exact deterministic case. What happens, does entanglement tell us something in this other weaker case? So we got approximate and stochasticity. Okay. Okay, this is again the results in the exact case. And of course, what happens in the generalized. What happens is that we can actually still find some good criteria, but the problem is that we need a sort of new type of entanglement measure. The ones that were around were not really good, didn't work very well in this case. And the idea is that what happens in this setting is that we are happy to get close to the state, because of this epsilon approximate part especially. So we don't really need to get to the maximal entanglement. We could, if the measure is strange, we could be happy to reach a little bit less entanglement as long as it allows us to get close to a state. What you'll see is that actually in this case, the stochasticity part doesn't really play that much a role, but what makes a difference is the fact that we are allowing approximations. So in order to formulate the criteria, I have one slide on a set of measures of entanglement, which were introduced by Marco, Hans, and me in a completely other setting, but they work. And we call them, with a lot of fantasy imagination, epsilon measures of entanglement. The idea is, okay, you get a state, rho, and, well, you can easily imagine an epsilon radius ball around your state rho. And now, given any entanglement measure E, I can think about the minimum entanglement contained in a state that is close to rho. Now, it happens that this epsilon version is actually a good entanglement measure. Okay, there are a bunch of experts here, maybe good in the sense that A, it is zero on separable states. B, it does not increase under global LOCC. It can increase on average under LOCC. We can actually prove it, but this is not always required, and we don't actually need it for the rest of the game here, so it's not important. It also has some other properties, but we don't need them that much. The idea is that this measure quantifies the entanglement that is contained in a state that we know only partially. Now, of course, we can make a lot of discussion about the exactness of how I formulated the sentence, but the idea is, okay, I know I wanted to create rho, and I know that I can only do it with some finite fidelity. Can I at least say, okay, I'm sure I have at least that amount of entanglement? This is exactly what happens, and this sort of gives an indication of why I'll use it in the next slide. So now, I promise that the measure I introduced was not only for sport, but because I actually needed it, and that's actually what happened. So this is our, as you can see, our LOCC protocol for approximate and stochastic state preparation. So we have our state, our outputs, and it satisfies this equation. So often enough, we have a state that is close enough for my desired state. So let's consider, first of all, the case delta equal to zero. So all of these guys have to be close enough to my psi. This means that we must be able to reach at least the minimal entanglement contained in the epsilon radius ball around psi. Which means that for exactly the same argument we had in the exact deterministic case, E of pi must be greater or equal to E epsilon star. But this is exactly the same definition, just applied to these epsilon measures instead of the original measure. Okay. It's exactly what we have in the exact deterministic case. Here I had an equality, but it's exactly the same thing, since it's an primordial case. In the general case, well, if delta is greater than zero, I can imagine that even if one, you know, I could sort of imagine that I put all of my entanglement in some of these outcomes so that I don't increase entanglement via LOCC, but I can actually have some separable states in here. So normally this is not okay, because with delta is equal to zero, all of these guys must be close to psi. But if delta is greater than zero, some of these guys can actually be thrown away. And this is the criteria you obtain. So return to your observation, you see epsilon and delta do have very different roles over here. Notice that, okay, for an entanglement measure to work in here, it does have to have some properties. And in particular, E, the original measure, has to be monotonic on average. If not, the argument doesn't hold, which I don't know whether it means that it's in general false, but I can't prove it. Okay. Now we have a new criteria in the approximate case. Again, can we use it? And the result is yes, luckily. But E epsilon star is in general hard to compute, because now you have to minimize and then maximize and everything. But it still can be done in some cases. So again, our friends W states, which are very convenient. And again, the geometric measure, which works pretty well on them. And okay, this is what we had beforehand. And now you can actually prove that E epsilon star is greater or equal than 1 minus F of epsilon, where this thing is a reasonable function, which is, again, a formal definition of something that behaves sort of continuously and goes to zero. And we do actually have an exact expression for it, but it's ugly. And of course, for epsilon small enough, this is strictly greater than the other one. So not only W states were not good for exact and deterministic state preparation, they're actually quite useless also for approximate state preparation. Of course, now, if you add stochasticity around here, then you had a 1 minute delta over there, and of course, if you're just happy to put the thing to work once every whatever, then it's going to be working. But still, they're not very efficient. Okay, so this is one example. There are others in which you can actually compute E epsilon star. But okay, in general, it's hard, but you can sometimes compute at least in the limit epsilon going to zero, which means that you can't, well, if something violates the criterion in this case, you can't do it for any arbitrary precision. And the previous examples which I've shown you in the exact deterministic case actually violate the criterion for epsilon going to zero. Again, the proof is not particularly ugly. It mainly consists in taking the limit of this quantity. It doesn't fit in the margin either. Now, up to now, I didn't say anything about efficiency. What does it mean? It means I was just cared about the fact that there existed a protocol and a state. It might have been incredibly large, incredibly long protocol, which is not particularly good. So this is what I was answering question number one. But what about question number two? Is it very expensive to compute the state in terms of time and of resources? Okay, the first thing is what we simply call universality. And the second question refers to what we call efficiency. Now, what is an efficient universal resource for state preparation? Well, this part is universality, this one. But now you want to have only polynomial resources and polynomial time. Also, you want polynomial classical processing and polynomial does a bunch of things. But the idea is this. So this guy is n qubits. You don't want to a state which is too large. You don't want to take too long. And you don't want to have to use a crazy classical computer to do the whole thing. Yeah. Yes. Okay, this is completely stupid because I've got the thing wrong. I want it for every side that can be created efficiently in the circuit or in the plasma state model. I completely forgot the thing. Preparing slides last minute is a very bad idea. Okay, for all that size that behave correctly in the plasma state model, you have one space. Of course, it's not possible. Okay, so again, the question, can we prepare the states? In the two stands for stochastic and approximate. So this is if we can, and then if we want to do it efficiently, we need to add some other requirements. And the requirements we add is that, okay, phi has to be poly n, again, for any psi that behaves correctly in the standard one-way model. But it also has to be polynomial in the probability of success and in the approximation, and also the time, and also everything else. Notice that this was the original requirement in the circuit model. Then in the circuit model, you've got Kitty-Solovey-Kittard's theorem that allow you a polylog scaling in the precision. Now, we could have required a polylog scaling in the precision, but for some arguments, we sort of wanted to have the scaling with the probability and the precision to behave analogously. This is because, well, I don't know, there was some sort of argument behind it, sort of led us to believe it was a good idea. But then the problem is that for the probability, we don't really have a good Solovey-Kittard theorem. So we were happy with the poly scaling in everything. Okay. Now, again, we can use entanglement to obtain no-go criteria, and the argument is similar. So the family must have enough entanglement, as usual, and the entanglement must, this is really sketchy, grow quickly enough with the size of the states. So this is our family of cluster states. We know that it's not universal. It's also efficiently universal. It does everything we want as quickly as it can. This is another family. And now K and then are, of course, number of qubits. It's clear from here. And you just want that the entanglement of your family is more or less as big as the entanglement of a cluster state given a poly a relation between the number of qubits. So quickly enough means something like this. In the approximate stochastic case, oh my gosh, here you should have also again the 1 over delta, 1 over epsilon. This is really bad. Okay, forget it. So if phi is not approximate efficient universal, then delta greater zero doesn't really help. And the idea is, again, the proof is not here, but what happens is that as we've seen in the case of without efficiency, so in the case without efficiency, we wanted our family to have entanglement that was greater or equal to 1 minus delta E star epsilon. Now, this was when we didn't really care about the scaling. But now let's care about the scaling. This 1 minus delta doesn't really change the scaling of anything. It's just some sort of constant multiplicative. So if this thing scales badly, let's suppose that the entanglement of this thing scales logarithmically with the number of qubits while in the cluster state is linear, then this still remains logarithmic and linear. So it doesn't really help if you want really add efficiency. So if something is not efficient universal with epsilon greater than zero, then, well, I don't really care whether delta is zero or greater than zero. It doesn't help. Of course, outside trivial examples of deltas, which is delta equal to one, so I'm happy to succeed with never, then it works. Okay. Now, I've got a bunch of no-go theorems, but there are some good news. Something does work. And, yep. Something works. So one example of this cluster state was told. So this is ideally, we want to have a wonderful cluster state, but we're in real life. And not every site managed to get its qubit. We are actually assuming that we know what holes are. And now one can actually prove that exactly deterministic computation here is not possible. But it's still useful. Indeed, it's a universal resource for exact stochastic computation for all values of delta greater than zero. And this was proved by means of percolation algorithm arguments by Akimasa, David, Steve, a bunch of people. Yeah, too many people for me to remember it. I'll do forgetting someone, so I'll probably be quiet. And okay. Oh, crap. Okay. Right, something works too. Animation is going crappy here, I don't know why. So suppose we again want to use a cluster state, but this time we're again in the real world, and there are errors, which are here, flashes, you can see there are a lot of them. So instead of having a cluster state, we have something else. And we can assume that this something else is not too bad, or there's nothing you can do, so let's assume that so each sigma n is some mixed state that we obtain instead of having our desired state plus state Cn. And that this error is bounded. D is some distance measure on the set of state. Now, what happens is that you can actually prove that the protocol does not increase the damage too much. Indeed, okay, it's an LST protocol, so the distance between states decreases given any contractive distance. But also that you can prove that the outputs, if the outputs were good enough in the first case, they remain good enough in the second case. So most branches will still end up close enough to the desired output. Yep. No. The only thing you actually know is that the fidelity between your real state and your desired state is bounded by something. Well, they were bounded by something. So you don't really know what state you have. But the idea is just knowing that the state is close enough to your cluster state, or in general, you'll see to any resource, allows you to say something about it.
How about this assumption? Would that be natural also if you would assume sort of a fixed error rate per site, so that the fidelity would increase exponentially in the size?
Yes, you're actually requiring high fidelity on the long run. Because you're actually requiring that the full state is close to your final full state.
To fulfill that requirement, you would need to shrink sort of the error probability of the size.
Yes. It doesn't mean to be a very strong result, but it is. And also for the cluster state, you have stronger ones. But the idea is that this whole argument holds for any resource state. Mm-hmm. And so it does make the first steps toward the addressing of the problem. So So, okay, cluster states are not so special, therefore this argument holds in general. It doesn't use properties of cluster states, which have been used in a lot of other proofs, like cluster states behave very nice, they have all this advantage when you measure all probability of outcomes are all the same. This allows us to do stronger arguments. Here we're assuming really nothing. So the idea is, okay, you start with an approximate stochastic resource, you put errors in it, and you end up with something which is different. And the only thing you know is that this thing is closed. Then you can prove that this resource is still approximately stochastic universal with some new parameters which satisfy this condition. The other thing is that you don't need to change the protocol. So it's still approximately stochastic universal with exactly the same protocol you used in the original resource. So you don't need to know anything about what happened in here. You just go on as if you had everything perfect. And you know that you still have something reasonable. So there's some sort of stability under perturbations. Of course, there's this problem. The larger the thing is, the harder this condition is to obtain.
May I ask a question?
Yep.
You've given the condition wherein you can carry on under these approximate or stochastic conditions.
Yep.
But what does that say about the particular nature of your error? Certainly, I could do lots of violations to the system that could violate it, right?
Well, the problem is the fact that you're bounding the final distance between the desired resource and the real resource puts some serious limits on what you can actually do to your system. You can't have errors everywhere because this is going to be a mess soon. But for the rest, the argument is only based on consideration about the behavior and the small perturbation of an LOCC protocol, of the outcomes of it, and so on. So in that sense, no. As long as you satisfy this condition, you can do your system whatever you want. I don't really care. It still works most of the time and often enough. Again, this has to be satisfied. So even if your resource was deterministic and exact, still you have that these guys are greater than zero. So you do lose something. You start from a deterministic exact resource. You add errors. You get something which is only approximate and stochastic, but you still get it. Okay. Well, these are the conclusions, which I will skip because you've just heard the talk. This is the literature, so this is published, and this will arrive in the article sooner or later. And, well, thank you. Yep.
So you said you didn't have a tolerated tie-up theorem for delta.
Okay, yeah.
I guess I don't understand why you can't just repeat the state. So then take the one that succeeds.
I don't know how that gets into the scaling. If you tell me I can, I believe you, definitely.
If you take two copies, right, only one of them has to succeed, right?
Yep.
That'll prove delta exponentially, right? Over 1 minus delta over 1 minus delta.
No one succeeds.
Yeah, right. Because you have because classical measurement outcomes tell you what's parameter.
Yeah. The notation here was sort of simple. You do have a way to know what it if it works. But yes, I guess you can do it, yeah. And you can probably so it doesn't sort of the idea is well, the whole argument doesn't really change with because it really looked at scaling, and the bounds are given in terms of what happens with cluster state. So, but yeah, possibly you can do it.
Another question. I'm thinking about the simplest situation that people have done two qubits interacting with its own electromagnetic field and so on, and found what they call sudden death, that is, the entanglement goes to zero and remains zero. It would be interesting to take some, well, you've given us the criteria, that is, that's your wishful thinking list, and then you can carry on. But in terms of concrete situations, it would be quite interesting to see if you do this approximate or stochastic parallel to it, whether you can overcome that, because it's a qualitative change there, and whether those approximations would preserve that. Yeah.
what happens is that, so that here says that if you started with something which was good enough, then you ended up in something which is still pretty good enough. Not exactly as before, a little bit worse, but still everything is fully normal. I don't know whether the thing you're considering.
The concern is that whether there will be revival. You see, because it's an epsilon delta, they can actually generate entanglement, where in the exact situation, there's zero from that point on.
Okay.
It's, I'm just raising.
I don't know. Right. That should be.
It's another 10.
Yeah.
Okay.